Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. Well, I'll tell you what, we had a cool and rainy spring, didn't we? It's hard to imagine that just a couple of years ago we were in the midst of a horrible drought. Every season is different, and while it can be tempting to make some assumptions about our own local observations, what you and I see, the bigger picture can actually be quite different. It's always a treat when we have a chance to talk with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. They always have a great way of explaining complex topics in a way that not only I can understand, but in a way that they can share with others, and you're helped as well. Steve directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies at the UW, also in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. And great to have you back, Steve.
It's great to be here.
And we also have John Martin, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. He's so dedicated that he's joining us by phone from a family trip. And good to talk with you, John.
Yeah, good to talk to you, Larry. Hi, Steve. How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Good.
All right. So are you far away from us or are you close?
No, I'm about 1,200 miles away. I'm in historic Peabody, Massachusetts.
Okay.
North of Boston.
What's the weather like there?
It's Seattle-like. It's kind of cloudy, clammy. Maybe we're going to see 63 today. Not very nice.
Oh, well.
So I think you guys are doing better than me. Is that right?
Well, I don't know. At my house yesterday, there was thunderstorms that moved through the area. At my house yesterday, we had a downburst that snapped my neighbor's tree, flipped my rowboat over, destroyed all of Ann's seedlings. Not so great. Other people didn't get hit, so it must have been a very local effect.
Wow, that's terrible.
Yeah.
You win.
So what's a downburst?
When we get a thunderstorm and the rain comes down, sometimes as that rain falls, it pulls the air down. And then if the rain evaporates, it also cools the air, which makes the air come down even faster. And so it could be a very localized effect associated with thunderstorms usually.
Yeah, we had one of those around our cabin up north, and we lost pretty much all the trees around in about a 10-acre place.
But yeah, they could vary in size from being pretty small, local, like it hit just our property, to pretty big, so it'll just knock down a whole bunch of trees.
And now here we are again last night, some severe tornado.
Tornadoes again, right, yeah. Yeah, tornado season's going good.
Yeah, is it worse than normal, or is it about the same? John, do you know?
No, I don't. I think it's been worse than last year, though. I think last year was really kind of a light year, if I remember right. And this year we're kind of more on our regular track. But I don't know how close to normal or whether or not we're above. I honestly don't know that.
Yeah, I don't remember. I think you're right. Yeah, last year was pretty normal. 2012 was also a pretty hot year, if I remember right.
Yeah, it was blistering hot. We had 40 days over 90. Or 39, sorry.
Oh. You wanted 40, didn't you?
Yeah. Oh, man.
Badly.
We are, we're talking, by the way, with Steve Ackerman and John Martin about the weather. Maybe you have witnessed an interesting weather phenomenon lately, or maybe you have a question about the weather. So let me have you join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. And certainly, if you've got some weather photos, post those up on my Facebook page as well, at The Larry Mueller Show, because we'd love to see that as well. Where did April, thinking back here, April, where did the temperatures in Wisconsin end up? We were talking about cold here. Where were we?
Yeah, go ahead, John.
I think we were below normal for April, which was the sixth straight month we were below normal. I don't know what we're running right now in May. Do you happen to know that, Steve?
We're just, southern Wisconsin's just about average temperature-wise, and northern Wisconsin is below average.
Mm.
And so how was that compared globally?
So globally, April was one of the hottest years that we've had. I think it tied 2010 for the second warmest global temperature. So again, that idea of what we experience locally isn't necessarily what's happening when you average over the entire globe.
Yeah, boy, oh boy.
Yeah, that's amazing. And so, this actually, it's always kind of interesting. This topic of local weather versus global trends, it often comes up. And is it possible to draw assumptions based on our local observations much larger?
I don't think so. I think that's kind of what this is proving. It's at least that's the way I'm now responding to such inquiries from friends and other colleagues, is that my sense is that you can really lead yourself down the primrose path. If you only look out your own window and say whatever's happening here must be a reflection of what's going on around the globe, you can really end up in a dangerous spot. So this winter is maybe the thing that actually really turned my head to that point of view, and I don't think I'll ever go back.
Yeah, yeah. Debbie in Waterford has a comment. Hi, Deb. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
We were up north in the Big Flats area this weekend, and on, I think it was Sunday afternoon, we're sitting on the deck, and all of a sudden the wind picked up like crazy. It was blue sky, no storms, nothing, and I mean, it like flipped bird feeders. Bushes were going way down. It was the weirdest thing. We have no clue what it was. It was almost like a little tornado, but there was no storm. Hmm. Any clue?
How hot was it?
It was in the 80s.
Any clouds in the sky?
Not a single cloud. That's
not a single cloud. Oh, wow, that's interesting.
When the wind hit, when the wind hit, was there a temperature change with it or anything?
No, there wasn't. It was just the weirdest thing. In fact, it took one of our little, the kids had like a beanbag game thing, and the little, the case that it goes in flew all the way across the road, and it was weird. It was extremely weird.
That's really interesting. I guess now I have two guesses. I originally had one. That's what prompted my question about the clouds. It might just be, I thought, it's not for sure, not this, but I thought it might be a situation in which you've got sort of a mid-level thunderstorm that's creating considerable amount of downdrafts underneath it. There's no clouds or there's no rain coming out of it where you are, but you can still get the downdraft of air, and that can be enough, just like what Steve was talking about at his house on the other day.
Right.
The other one that comes to mind, though, which is maybe more probable but harder to actually be, feel confident about, is that you might have just had a local spot where somehow the stratification of the atmosphere was really weak, perhaps because it was sunny and warm, over your spot, and that allowed mixing of really high momentum air from higher elevations right down to the ground in one small little area. But that seems kind of unusual.
It was really freaky.
The only thing I can think of.
And did it last long, or was it just a short duration?
It was maybe about less than a minute, but it was just the weirdest thing. All of a sudden, because I mean, some of the chairs on the deck like tipped over, and like the bird feeder wet, and then bushes were way down on the ground, and it's like, what's going on? It was really weird.
Well, thank you for reporting that weirdness, Debbie.
Yeah,
that's pretty cool. Thanks a lot.
Cool. So we're calling it the little non-weather related tornado of Big Flats.
I like your phrase of weird wind. Big Flats weird wind.
Thanks, Deb.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. You can join in too. The number to call 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. Well, El Nino is brewing up in the Pacific Ocean, is it not?
Yeah, we've been in kind of normal conditions seems like a year. But yeah, an El Nino is a warming of the eastern Pacific waters, and we began to see that. And it's warming pretty rapidly. And so people are looking at it carefully because El Nino really does impact our winter weather. It's usually warmer or less snowfall as well.
Oh, and so now how does it happen that the water, the ocean heats up? I mean, that's a lot of water out there.
Yeah. John, you want to go for it or you want me to take a shot?
Yeah, I'll try a little bit of that. It's right at the equator. It's equatorial water. And so there's across the equator, across the Pacific basin, there's a huge amount of water, of course. And in the far western Pacific, it's usually very warm down near Sumatra, Indonesia, places like that. And for reasons that are still being debated, occasionally the ocean, the water from the western part of the Pacific will slosh to the east, and that actually makes it warmer in the eastern part of the Pacific Ocean, depresses what's called the thermocline, which is usually pretty close to the surface in the eastern part of the Pacific, and then that whole part of the basin is flooded with relatively warm water, and that's what actually raises the temperature. How exactly you start to get that going is a combination of processes that go on all by themselves in the ocean, and also with forcing from the winds over the equator in the atmosphere, and they ebb and flow, and the exact nature of the way that they ebb and flow is part of the atmospheric question related to how the El Nino gets going. So it's a really complicated atmosphere-ocean interaction problem in the tropics that is puzzling, and we've made a lot of progress understanding it, can even make reasonable predictions of it now, but still a lot to learn.
And it, how often does it happen?
It typically say 3 to 7 years, so it has a periodicity to it, but it's not a very strong periodicity.
Yeah, and it's not regular, yeah.
Yeah, not regular.
Sharon in Milwaukee, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hello. I was at Lake Arrowhead, which is 5 miles north of Big Flat, and the lady that said that she had all the wind and the furniture and everything blow over. We were on the lake on our pontoon boat at the far end of the lake, and when we came into the dock, there was a gentleman at the dock saying, "Oh, my God, did you people see the water spout?" And I'm like,
"Oh,
no.
Wow.
Right here, and it followed me," and he said, "I thought it was going to die." He said it was just like a tornado.
Wow.
That happened five miles just north of there at the same time.
How do you like that? So it was convective, but without clouds. Water spouts sometimes can just kind of spin up in poorly stratified columns of air and over the water, and maybe that's kind of what was going on that day. How do you like that? That's really interesting.
Thanks, Sharon.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call. And Greg in Madison, hi.
Hi, how are you? This was a response to Debbie's call and the last caller. They talked about the water spout and earlier the mysterious wind. Well, in the Soren community, we catch these thermals, is what they are, and we catch them and fly them all the time. And from the air, you see the swirls in the corn or big swirls in the water in lakes. And my guess is it's just a big thermal that came up, and it seems like a big gust of wind on the ground, but in the air, you see that it's actually much more than that.
And then that would be consistent with the water spout that was observed as well.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and consistent also with the idea that the thermal is going to have some momentum in a spot where the stratification is weaker. And so that's also consistent. So it's very interesting.
Yeah. Thanks, Greg.
Yeah, well, yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. Boy, talking weather and climate today with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. Steve directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies and is professor in atmospheric and oceanic sciences, as is John Martin, professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison. They'll be with us right up until 12:30 today. Call in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, there's never a shortage of things to talk about with our weather guys, Steve Ackerman and John Martin. They'll be talking about what you and I have been experiencing, what's on the horizon weather-wise, and make you and I a whole lot smarter in general. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today. And if you have a weather question or comment, I hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And certainly if you have a great weather photo or an interesting weather photo, please post it up on The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And, of course, Steve directs the Cooperative Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. Great to have you with us, Steve.
It's great to be here.
And John Martin. John is the professor of atmospheric and oceanic sciences at UW-Madison as well. John, thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, you bet, Larry. Pleasure.
Well, we have callers online to visit with you, so let's go to the phones. And Mark in Door County up next. Mark, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. My family just recently built a home up in Door County, and we're on the bayside. And as we've been enjoying the water, we've noticed that on a daily basis, the water levels seem to change. And we're wondering if that is an impact of the wind just shifting more water in one direction or another, or if there is any kind of a tidal effect in the bay.
So, yeah, it's probably it is the wind shifting the water. Being an East Coaster, I wondered about tides a few years ago on the Great Lakes and, did some research and some background reading. And the lunar tides on the Great Lakes, they're there, but they're really tiny, like maybe a half an inch or something like that. So most of the water movements that we see are driven by the winds. And in particular, There's two big things that can generate really big differences that look like tides. One is a siege, and that's when the wind blows really strongly from the same direction, and it pushes all the water up against one side of the lake, and then when those winds weaken, all that water sloshes back. And then the other one is the one that I'm just learning about through a colleague here in the engineering school who actually is modeling them. It's called meteorological tsunamis. And those are associated with thunderstorms, like a line of thunderstorms that moves over, particularly Lake Michigan. So I think you'll see it in the Green Bay area as well, where you know, it just, again, pushes the water around, and then it sloshes around the base, the southern part of Lake Michigan, and can cause really big waves that look like, you know, rapid tides moving in.
That's awesome. Interesting. I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
Yep, there you go.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Mark. Rick in Minocqua, hi to you.
Yes, hello. I have a question for these gentlemen. It's nice I get to talk to two climate scientists about global warming. My first question is, do both of you gentlemen believe that greenhouse gases and anthropogenic forces have contributed to global warming?
I do.
Yeah, I wouldn't use the verb belief. I would say I've come to the conclusion from the evidence that that is the facts.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because I have very many friends who have no training. In fact, their understanding of science in general is somewhat limited, who will repeatedly tell me, well, that's junk science, it's this, it's that. And I was just wondering, amongst your colleagues, you oftentimes hear that the majority of climate scientists believe that. Is that your belief as well, that amongst your colleagues, the vast majority have come to the conclusion based on the evidence and the scientific method that that is the situation?
Yes, I can speak for my the people who I know. Steve and I don't know all the same people, but I'm trying to think, as you're asking the question, if there's a single individual I know who does not subscribe to that as the conclusion of the evidence. And I'd say I do know of one person. I don't know him very well, but I know of only one person out of a collection of probably a couple of hundred colleagues who I would be able to say confidently it remains a skeptic. Everybody else in that list of 200 does not remain skeptical.
Yeah, I would say the same thing. Everybody that I work with knows that, yeah, greenhouse gases are being emitted by humans, particularly carbon dioxide, but also methane. The physics shows us that we should expect warming. We're seeing that warming, and then we're also seeing the impacts that you might expect that would go along with that warming. You know, so shifts in the biosphere, shifts in ice coverage, and things like that as well. So everything kind of holds together. And when you look at the data with an open mind, it's really, I don't see how you can conclude otherwise. In fact, 98%, I think, of scientists agree that, yep, the data says that we're seeing global warming.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that occurred to me the other day along these lines, Steve put it perfectly, is we've got this raging drought again in Texas. And a couple of years ago, there was a raging drought in Texas, and people considered it about the worst one ever. Now, this one's even worse, apparently, at this stage. And my question for the people who are skeptical is, especially in the light of the fact that predictions have been made in the last 3 to 5 to 10 years about, here are some of the things we might expect to see more frequently, such as prolonged droughts in certain parts of the world, not just anywhere, in the desert Southwest, in western Texas. What's it going to take before some of that skepticism gives way a little bit to the realities that are going on around us? You know, I mean, this is not to say that this is guaranteed, the drought in Texas is guaranteed to be a consequence of global climate change. But boy, oh boy, when you start to get to the point where you can make predictions about the nature of perturbations to the weather that might start to become more frequent, and then they actually become more frequent, you have to start to think you're on the right track.
Yeah.
Especially long-range predictions, yes. Okay,
that's right, exactly.
I'll ask you gentlemen one last question, then I'll leave this to the other callers. What? I understand it's difficult to use this as a percentage, but there are some skeptics who would say, well, there are natural climate variations, patterns throughout history, and I guess that's a historical and scientific fact, and that if there is a contribution of anthropogenic emissions, greenhouse gases, you know, methane and carbon dioxide, that it's really a minor contribution. Is that possibly a reasonable position for a skeptic to take, that, yeah, there's natural variability, and this just maybe exacerbates it a slight amount.
Yeah, there is natural variability going on, but when you look at, you know, what the current changes have been, particularly over the last 50 years, looking at natural variability that you would expect, you can't reproduce the current changes that we're seeing without putting in the human aspect.
Yeah, and to testify to Steve's point, April of 2014 was the first month in the now 60-year record at Mauna Loa, Hawaii, where we're taking daily carbon dioxide measurements in a remote area of the globe. So it's pretty well unaffected by pollution. It's kind of a nicely mixed global average. First time that the monthly average value of the carbon dioxide fraction has been above 400 parts per million. And we have that to compare against reconstructions from ice that's been mined either in the South Pole or the North Pole areas, Greenland. And in the last 800,000 years, we've never had a carbon dioxide fraction as high or higher than that. So that really says a lot in my mind, that we have had something to do with cooking up the soup that surrounds us right now.
Yeah.
And it's never had, it doesn't have a precedent in the last million years. And that's probably a function of human activity.
There you go.
Thank you, gentlemen, enough for coming on the show and answering my questions. I sure appreciate it, and keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks. Thanks, Rick. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have David in Madison next with a question. Hi, David.
Hi. Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity and the fine show as usual. My question is, wasn't the human component of the emission of greenhouse gases through deforestation and the early years of the Industrial Revolution, wasn't that already predicted and started to be followed by, I believe, originally Scandinavian scientists well over a century ago, is my question. And if so, or something close to that, that certainly would get rid of the ridiculous notion put out by some I don't know if I call them news organizations, but some propaganda organizations that it's a hoax or a Obama scare or some nonsense like
right.
that. The question is, isn't it well over a century or so that this has been a part of the predicted equation scientifically?
Yeah, Arrhenius, I don't know, I think he is Swedish. Arant Arrhenius, I think, was the first to propose and then flesh out some serious argument about, hey, wait a minute, he understood the greenhouse effect, I guess, was one of the first people to understand that based on what was being learned in Germany about radiation. And he had the idea that if you increase the concentration of certain gases in the atmosphere, you will have the impact of warming the planet up. And that's as much as I know about the really long history, but that was in the 1880s, 1890s,
yeah.
I think?
Yeah, the late 1800s.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you're right. I mean, physics is physics. So yeah.
Yeah, that's right. There's just no two ways about it. You can't pretend that that's not true just because you don't want it to be true.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. There you go. Thank you, David, for calling. I appreciate your call. And we had an email from Paul. Can you please address how global warming creates not just higher average temperatures, but also more energetic weather and various extremes? Can you describe a few of these mechanisms? That's a hard question. I mean,
I'm going to turn that to John and your jet stream work, John.
That's a tough one, but that's where I'd go first. I'd try and figure out how does it affect the jet. So one of the things that anybody who lives near a lake, like if you live near Lake Mendota, you know, in the winter, in the late fall, early winter, you get a lot of steam coming off the lake, because what's happened is there's been an enormous amount of solar radiation absorbed by the water over the course of the summertime. And then that energy is released to the atmosphere when the air above it gets colder, because there's a heat transfer from warm objects to cold objects in the universe. That's the second law of thermodynamics, inviolable as far as we know. And so one of the things that's going on perhaps in our warmer climate is that the Arctic sea ice, and I'm talking about the northern hemisphere Arctic now, is a little bit less substantial coverage, and so more of the Arctic Ocean is absorbing solar radiation during the summertime than it used to. And as a consequence, when it starts to get cold in the winter, there's energy coming off of that water that used to be ice 50 or 100 years ago during August and early September. So that heat that's being stored first in the ocean and then released when it starts to get cold in the northern hemisphere winter is, we think, potentially having an impact on the way that waves in the atmosphere that produce the weather are being there's one theory that says they're being elongated in the north-south direction, which would allow for excursions of very cold air from the pole to southern latitudes, perhaps with higher frequency, and then also excursions of very warm tropical air to high latitudes, perhaps with greater frequency. So that would help to start explain extreme warm or cold periods during winters. And there seems to be some evidence, and we're working on this problem right now in a way that I never thought I'd get dragged into it. There seems to be some evidence that suggests, hey, this is definitely worth looking at. And so we're kind of trying to peel the skin off that onion right now, this summer. We might have some results by the end of the summer that tell us whether or not climate models see that process happening in a very easy-to-measure way. So it's very exciting, and that's one way that it might, that a warmer climate, lower amount of sea ice in the summertime in the Arctic might actually have an impact on Northern Hemisphere winter.
Wow, that's really interesting. We had a comment from a listener wondering about websites or other resources that lay out the arguments for human components of climate change that lay people, any of us, can understand.
I would look at a website. I'd start with, it's called climate.gov, and it's put out by educators with NOAA who are focusing on climate science. And they'll give you a current state of the atmosphere and the conditions, as well as expectations, outlooks. And then there are links off of there that have some nice explanations of changes that we've been observing. Climate.gov.
Climate.gov. You know, just sort of related here, you know, it's always great when we get letters and emails from people who have kids or grandkids who are really interested in science and weather. And I know, Steve, you found a book that might be a good resource for that. What's that book?
So the name of that book is, it's called Dr. Fred's Weather Watch, Create and Run Your Own Weather Station. And it's written by a fellow named Bortz, B-O-R-T-Z, and Marshall Shepard. And Bortz is writes a lot of science books for kids, so this isn't his only one. And Marshall Shepard is a colleague of ours.
He
was past president of the American Meteorological Society.
Yeah.
So it's a good book. It's one where we've had callers ask about making simple weather stations with their kids, and it's targeted at kids 10 and above. So
I've got to get a copy of that.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. And they ask, you know, they answer, they have some interesting questions there, like the biggest hailstone and things like that as well.
Well, you know, yeah, Emily is 10.
She's ready for it.
And she's got the summer ahead of her. And she's got...
turn her over to us, Larry, and you'll never know what hit her.
she's got a gal who's going to be taking care of her, who's planning on going to medical school someday, so she's a Sharpie, too.
All right. Yeah, we'll teach you how to take weather obs and keep a weather diary. And...
I'm definitely getting that book. And we actually posted it on my... We have a copy of that, or a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Judith put it up. But again, the title, Dr. Fred's Weather Watch, Create and Run Your Own Weather Station, and by Alfred Bortz, and Amazon, and we have the Amazon link on my Facebook page.
Oh, great.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's good. It's nice to finally see a good book out there.
It definitely is. Well, we have, you can join in, by the way, if you have a question or comment. Daniel phoned in with a comment, or actually commented on Facebook, talking about weather and so forth. And here in Barron, Wisconsin, which is kind of north, we got about 0.6 inches of rain last night. That makes 8.9 inches of rain for May.
Yeah, northern Wisconsin is above average for this month, as a test of that. Southern Wisconsin has been below average, although I don't know what the impact of these current storms that went through. And it was really variable down here. I know I got like 0.4 inches at my house. And on the southern side of Lake Mendota, there were people who only got 0.1 inches. So pretty variable.
Weird.
But most of northern Wisconsin is above average.
Fond notions about Barron. I did some of my PhD research in Barron, Wisconsin.
So, oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I know that town well, even though it's been a few years ago.
A few years.
Quite a few.
I don't think that much has changed in 5 years, Larry.
Yeah. 5 years, all right. Bob in Milwaukee, your turn. Thanks for calling, Bob.
Hi, thanks. We're going to be on Cape Cod August 2 through 9, so I'm wondering how accurate are these long-term forecasts for summer weather, let's say in southern New England or anywhere, I guess?
No, you can't count on them for sort of a day-to-day depiction of how the weather's going to be, but climatology is pretty robust, and that 2nd to the 9th of August, that's about the best time you can go down there. I'll bet you at least one of those days will be well over 90 degrees, the water will be warm, and traffic will be light.
But you can't do any better than at least one of those days.
Well, I can't guarantee you anything more than one of those days. I think it's pretty fair to say that one of those seven, you're going to have a really nice day. You might have a whole week that's great, but there's no way that you should expect a forecast of the accuracy that you might get for the coming week here in Madison.
Yeah, that's far out.
You know, for that far out. We can't do that. Yeah.
Okay. John, I think this is the first traffic forecast I have ever heard you make.
I threw that in just to see if anybody would pay attention. I knew you I should have guessed you would. That one will be wrong, as you
right,
want to know. If it had been the Cape Cod, that'll be wrong. But everything else, hopefully, will be right.
There
okay,
you go.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot for calling. I was taking a look at the weather. I'll be in Orlando and. Over the next 5 days or so, and or a little longer, and the next 5 days in Orlando calls for rain every day.
Right. And John, what's the traffic in Orlando next week?
I'm not quite sure. I don't have my model running on.
Oh, man. Todd in Madison, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. My comment kind of goes right along with what you guys were saying. It seems sort of like the modern technology gives a great idea for a large picture. But then the local weather scene, I mean, like one side of town will get rain, the other won't, and there's no real way you can call that. Or even from Cross Plains to Madison and from Cross Plains to Sauk City, the weather varies hugely. But
yeah, particularly this time of year.
Yeah, this is very seasonal, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the
wind.
Go ahead, John.
Go ahead, Steve. You have the idea.
Yeah, I was going to say in the summertime, as John's saying, it's very seasonal. So in the summertime with thunderstorms, it's very spotty of what can get hit by a storm and who's going to get missed. But in the wintertime, when we start talking about big fronts, cold fronts, warm fronts, if Madison's going to get rain, then nearby Middleton's going to get rain as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Can I also make a comment?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Another one? A really great sight. I fish a lot, so I kind of really watch the weather and the conditions. And the NOAA website is incredible. You get radar, but the best thing to do on it is click down on the bottom and it says forecast discussion.
Oh, yeah.
And just talking back. It takes a long time. I had to look up all the words. I mean, they have the glossary right there. You can click on the word. Once you understand the shorthand and everything, you get a really nice, it's like what the weather stations talk about all the time. That's where they get it, I suppose.
Yeah, that's the technical discussion among colleagues, so it's a really good place to go. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, and sometimes, too, the abbreviations I got to go look up. It's like, what is that?
Once you see once it's explained what that means, it's like it all starts making sense. It's just sort of like looking at boiling liquids and the same sort of ideas, except it's air. And I don't know, it's just kind of interesting. Not as complicated. Well, it's complicated, but at least you can understand the larger picture of it.
Right.
You know?
Well, there you go. Thanks, Todd. Thanks a lot for calling. And the weather... the weather here for the next in Wisconsin, we're going to get, it's going to be more of the same. We don't know what the heck's going
on. Right, yeah. It's going to be chances of thunderstorm.
Maybe a tornado
Maybe
someday,
a tornado here or there.
Maybe not.
Right. Traffic not so bad, except around construction sites, which is terrible.
I shouldn't have never said anything about traffic. But, you know, it's funny. We've been gone for a week. We were in New York City first, and we expected it was going to rain a couple of different days. And it's been really difficult to make even a one-day forecast in terms of whether it's going to rain and when at this time of year. And so as Steve points out, this is a really difficult transition season time of the year, and especially at the end of this cold winter, which is persisting, very hard to nail that kind of forecast of what the day will actually be like. We've had a lot of days that have been wrong, but none of them have been overly wet, which has been nice. But it's amazing how bad the one-day and two-day forecasts have been for this whole week.
Yeah.
And I guess it sounds like that in Wisconsin, too.
Well, I'm hoping they're wrong in Orlando. That's what
I'm hoping.
Thanks, guys. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much. We'll look forward to our next visit next month.
Great.
I appreciate it very much. Steve Ackerman and John Martin are weather guys from the University of Wisconsin-Madison Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences. Steve also directs the Institute for Meteorological Satellite Studies. I'm going to be off, as I said, for a few days. Judith, of course, will be filling in and doing her usual great job. And we'll be talking about straw bale gardening and how to get started in it. I've got my straw bales. I've got all the plants planted. I'm looking forward to a good crop. Stay with us.